It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Tagora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 424. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to open up the Twitter mailbag. We haven't done a mailbag episode of the podcast in just a few minutes. Lots of great Phillies questions came into the virtual mailbag, so I will run those down here in the next few minutes. Some local and national media are slamming John Middleton for his news conference last Saturday, or two Saturdays ago, actually, and we'll tell you what they're saying about the direction of this team and some decisions that were made over the last few years. It's not going to make you feel too good, guys. A popular Phillies broadcaster has been told his services are no longer required. And are the Phillies in danger of wasting Bryce Harper's, as well as some other young players' primes? I wrote a piece in The Good Fight about that this week, and I'll tell you about that coming up here in just a few minutes as well. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. Most Phillies fans are still talking about that John Middleton news conference, by the way, and the future of Andy McPhail and the general direction of this baseball team that we all follow so closely. And I know you guys listening to this podcast, if you are listening to a Philadelphia Phillies podcast in October, after the Phillies just lost, just had another terrible September collapse and failed to make an expanded postseason with a payroll near $208 million, if you are still listening to this podcast every week, you are a true Phillies fan. You are a diehard. There's no getting rid of you. I just don't think there's anything this team can do that will get rid of you. Now, that's not most Phillies fans. let's be clear about that. But you and I have a disease. We are never going to be cured of it. We grew up loving this baseball team, and we love this baseball team even when they're doing things that infuriate us and make us scratch our heads and, frankly, make us want to not follow the team at some points. And right now, I can't remember the last time I have ever felt as despairing about the future of this baseball team than I do right now, because this team has some good things going for it, but I have no idea what direction this team is taking, and it all comes from the top. It comes from the owner. It comes from the front office, and we have been hearing a number of things over the last few days and weeks by reporters for The Athletic, other beat reporters, that the Phillies don't seem to have any idea. John Middleton doesn't seem to have any idea exactly which direction to go. And so there are a couple of pieces in The Athletic over the last few days that, if you haven't caught yet, I wanted to bring to your attention because they are interesting and they say a lot about where the Phillies are as the 2020 season finishes up here with the playoffs going on. I'm recording this as the ALCS and the NLCS are going on. Once again, the ninth straight year without the Phillies in the postseason, the second longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball. Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic wrote a piece this week about Atlanta Braves starter Ian Anderson, who, as you all know by now, was taken third overall in the 2016 Major League Baseball draft, the very same draft in which the Phillies had the number one overall pick and went with high school outfielder Mickey Moniak. And in a piece where they wrote about Ian Anderson, he couldn't resist throwing this nugget in against John Middleton. He wrote, "Phillies owner John Middleton recently defended his team's choice of outfielder Mickey Moniak with the number one pick in 2016 by saying it was a, quote, skim milk year for first-round talent. Evidently, Middleton was not aware of Anderson, who on Tuesday night pitched four shutout innings in the Braves' 8-7 victory over the Dodgers at Globe Life Field to extend his scoreless streak to 15 2/3 innings over his first three playoff starts. Perhaps the owner also was not aware of the Dodgers' two first-round picks in 2016, infielder Gavin Lux at number 20 and catcher Will Smith at number 32. Of course, the Cincinnati Reds also have gotten had some decent production out of their number first-round pick Nick Senzel. But I don't want it to be lost. I mean, I don't want us to get too far down the rabbit hole in thinking that 2016 was a great draft for first rounders, because it wasn't. It was not a draft where there was a clear number one pick. And we all know what the Phillies' plan was. The Phillies' plan was to get a guy in Mickey Moniak who was not many people thought was deserving of the number one overall pick, but because there was no consensus slam dunk Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg like number one pick, the Phillies went with a guy that they knew they could sign under slot. They went with a guy they knew that they could sign for cheaper than maybe some other picks at number one overall, and then they decided they would try and spend over slot for second and third round picks that year. And both of those picks, they whiffed on all three of those picks. Kevin Gowdy was the second round pick. He has been utterly beset by injuries and has barely pitched at all since the 2016 draft. He just is most likely, the odds are entirely against him becoming an effective major league pitcher at some point. And in the third round, they again went over slot and signed a Cole Staub, a high school shortstop, and he has been disastrous in the minors. Now, in the fourth round, they went and they drafted JoJo Romero, and he looks like he could be a halfway decent bullpen piece. He showed a little bit of something. Cole Irvin has gotten some major league time. He was their fifth round pick, but after that, the 2016 draft is largely a disaster. And that just can't happen if you've got the number one overall pick in the draft. So Middleton, I don't know if he was necessarily wrong when he said it was a skim milk year for first round talent, but he did seem to not understand that Ian Anderson, who was taken two picks after Mickey Moniak, is absolutely dealing for the division rival that is most likely to keep the Phillies from winning the National League East for the next few years. It was a tone deaf moment. It was a moment of arrogance where basically saying that there was no way they could have gotten that number one overall pick right in 2016, and that's just not the case. Ian Anderson was there, and they passed on him, and that is going to be something that they're going to have to deal with over these next few years. They're going to have to deal with the fact that they had the number one overall pick, and they're going to get absolutely nothing for it in Mickey Moniak. And that's just, that is a draft mistake that you just don't live down. Some of that is bad luck, but also it's bad process in many different ways. So Ken Rosenthal took time out of his Ian Anderson story to mention John Middleton's comment about a skim milk year for first-round talent. Matt Gelb in The Athletic, I don't know if it was the day before or the day after, but Ken Rosenthal's colleague at The Athletic was writing about the JT Realmuto contract extension and the failure by the Phillies to sign the best catcher in baseball to a contract extension. And he wrote, "The Phillies at the start of the offseason between 2019 and 2020 signaled to Realmuto's agents that they could not discuss an extension until after a one-year deal was finalized." This is the arbitration number. The reason? The Phillies had prioritized staying under the luxury tax for the 2020 season, and that meant they needed the annual average value of Realmuto's deal to stay around $10 million. This soured Realmuto's camp. It was an ownership-level decision. At some point, John Middleton went from saying, "I want my bleeping trophy back," to the number one priority is to stay below the luxury tax. And these were decisions that were made, mind you, before COVID-19. This decision to stay below the luxury tax has nothing to do with the coronavirus. This was a decision that was made somewhere in the hierarchy of the Phillies front office. We talked about it last offseason when the Phillies refused to address relief pitching. And we speculated that the reason they maybe didn't sign another starting pitcher after Zach Wheeler or any relief pitching was because they wanted to stay under the luxury tax. And that's clearly what they wanted to do. So part of the failure of the Phillies bullpen this year also has to lay at the feet of John Middleton. Now, Matt Klentak's got to do a better job finding at least one or two guys and developing one or two guys that can pitch in the bullpen so you don't need to go spend $5, $6, $7 million on more bullpen arms. But nevertheless, the Phillies' decision not to spend anything in free agency on the bullpen stemmed entirely from their decision to their priority to stay under the luxury tax in 2020. And again, Liz talked about it on the last podcast, and we've talked about it before on this podcast. The overage for going over the luxury tax the first time you do it is 20% on the, or like 10% or 20% on the overage. So if you go over by $6 million, you're paying basically 20% of $6 million. It's nothing. Especially when you've just committed $330 million for 13 years for Bryce Harper. Why are you going to jam on the brakes now? We talked about this last offseason. It dominated these podcasts last offseason because we couldn't understand spending all that money for Jake Arrieta, spending the money for David Robertson, even though he flamed out and was hurt, spending that money on Bryce Harper, trading for JT Realmuto. Why are you stopping at the water's edge? After going through all that, why is that your priority? After here's where the next thing comes in, where some additional dunking on John Middleton comes in, and it comes from former Phillies radio broadcaster Jim Jackson, who announced on Twitter this week that he was laid off by the Phillies. And one of the lines from Jackson's own social media post really got everyone's attention, got my attention right away. He said, quote, "The Phillies have informed me they are no longer in need of my services. I'm told I'm a, quote, luxury the organization can no longer afford in such uncertain times." First of all, that's just demeaning. If he was actually told that, that is a demeaning. It minimizes Jim Jackson's efforts and contributions. It essentially tells him, we didn't really need you this whole time. Thanks for your 14 years of service, but you weren't really necessary. You know, you're not a guy we have to have. You're a luxury. Okay? You're name brand cereal. We don't need the name brand cereal. Okay? We don't need Cheerios. We need toasted oats. Okay? And you know, you don't Thank you for sticking around for 14 years and doing an outstanding job, but you're just a luxury we can no longer afford. And maybe they didn't mean it like that. Maybe the Phillies, maybe whoever told him that didn't mean that the way it came off. But it sure sounded snotty and snide. And I think Jim Jackson took offense to it because he made clear to mention that exact quote to him in his thank you note goodbye, and he did not thank Phillies owner John Middleton or any of the other members of the front office. He did mention David Montgomery numerous times. Folks, here's the bottom line with where the Phillies are right now. I am disturbed by the direction of this franchise. I'm disturbed by the impending layoffs that are coming to a team that for years has been making money. The Phillies have not been losing value until this year. They have been seeing their value increased year after year. Even though they weren't in the playoffs this year, they still get a hefty chunk of the revenue sharing from the TV deal, from the TV money. They did sign a $2.5 billion cable contract a few years ago. My guess is that money didn't run out. And so here is you have a team. You don't own a baseball team. You don't own a sports franchise to lose money, and I get that. And I really don't believe that this is a team that has been losing money every year. My guess is that this baseball franchise has been making money every year. You know, if JJ's language is correct, the way they brushed him off as some kind of luxury is demeaning. That's just not a way to treat someone who's been a valued member of the broadcast team for a freaking decade and a half. And so I'm really struggling with the direction of this. And listen, I love the Phillies. I love this organization. I love this baseball team. I've loved this baseball team since I was a kid. I want this baseball team to succeed. I desperately want this baseball team to succeed. I want this baseball team to make smart decisions. I want this baseball team to be headed in the right direction. I want there to be good leadership at the top. I want this baseball team to compete. I want it to be good to their employees. I want it to be an organization that values people and that doesn't treat people like numbers and essentially makes you feel good to root for them. And listen, I'm not on the inside of the Phillies. This is coming from an outsider's perspective. So I'm trying not to be unfair to the organization because I do understand that there are challenges that have been brought about by COVID. I really do understand that. But here's the situation, and I'm gonna put aside the layoffs, the potential layoffs to employees and to guys like Jim Jackson and stuff like that. And I want to look at the product on the field because as fans, as baseball fans, that's what you care about most. Is this team gonna put a winning product on the field? And if they're going to slash payroll, if they're not going to keep payroll about where it is, then I don't see how this team stays competitive. I don't see how they get John Middleton's bleeping trophy back. And then you're going to waste the prime of Bryce Harper's career. You know, Bryce Harper played his age 27 season this year. He's one of the National League Hank Aaron Award nominees, which is awarded annually to the best overall offensive performer in each league. And he's not going to win the award because the six other players that were mentioned with him, some of these guys had better seasons. Juan Soto had the best OPS and weighted runs created in the league. He has a better chance. Freddie Freeman had the highest wins above replacement of any National League player. Now that incorporates defense and stuff, and this is just an offensive award. His OPS was just slightly below Juan Soto's, as was his weighted runs created. But you've got a guy like Bryce Harper had the third highest OPS of any National League player and was tied for the fourth highest weighted runs created. So again, Juan Soto or Freddie Freeman probably deserved to win this award. But nevertheless, Bryce Harper had a solid season, a 962 OPS. He had 268, 425, 42 in 58 games, team leading 13 homers, 41 runs scored. He brought his strikeout rate down from 26.1% to 17.6% this season. Over a full season, he would have been worth 4.3 wins above replacement. Pretty good season. All right, that's hopefully what you're getting as a baseline from Bryce Harper, and you hope that there's maybe a 6 or a 7 win season in there at some point. How much more of this guy's prime are we going to waste? Here's 2 years, his age 26 and 27 season, where the Phillies didn't make the playoffs. And now the hinting is that because we don't know whether fans are going to be allowed in the stands next year, are we looking at reducing payroll? JT Realmuto is going to get a big contract because now we're hearing the Yankees could possibly look to move on and get a new catcher. Gary Sanchez was brutal this year, and he's an abomination behind the plate. You can easily see the Yankees making a huge push for JT Realmuto. That's the nightmare scenario. Also, the New York Mets have a new owner who wants to spend and wants to target catcher. You've got the two New York teams who are going to go hard after JT Realmuto. And if the Phillies are going to reduce payroll, it's not even going to be a question that they're going to lose him. And that's probably why they've already written it off. It sounds like they've already written it off. JT Realmuto would be stupid to negotiate and agree to a free agent deal during this time where the Phillies still do have an exclusive negotiating window with him. He has to hear what the Yankees and Mets are going to offer him, as well as some of the other teams in baseball that are going to want to go after him. But maybe there's just no choice that you're going to lose JT Realmuto if he really wants to leave, but there's no way you can sign him if you're reducing payroll. And so then what do you do about shortstop? What about Didi Gregorius? What about getting a number three starter? What about fixing the bullpen? Are you going to move backwards and waste the primes of not only Bryce Harper, but Aaron Nola, who's also 27 years old? Rhys Hoskins is 27 years old. You've got Zach Wheeler, who's 30, Gene Segura, who's 30. I mean, these are guys who are still in the primes of their careers that you're going to be wasting if you decide to pull back the financial reins. I mean, I agree that $200 million should be enough to field a competitive playoff-bound baseball team, especially during a season where you have three additional teams from each league reaching the postseason. But when you have failed to develop your own talent, the only way you can compete is to spend money. And so far up to this season, the Phillies have done that, but frustratingly, to the point of not going over the luxury tax. Here's the problem with what the Phillies are doing. You can't abide by the luxury tax if you haven't been able to develop your own players. If you want to be good and you haven't been able to develop players, whether it's through years of bad drafts, poor player development, or trades that, you know, were fine in small ways, but never found that value in the margins. So it never got you a Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows for Chris Archer type Tampa Bay Rays deal. If you haven't been able to get one or two trades like that to work out in your favor, then you have to spend, and you even have to go over the luxury tax to do it. But it sure doesn't sound like that's what the Phillies are going to do. And the Phillies are in real danger of wasting the best years of a player in Bryce Harper that they spent $330 million on two off-seasons ago. And so that's that's my concern with this baseball team right now is the direction of this franchise, both on the field and off the field. I just don't know where they're going. I don't know who's making the decisions. And how long are we going to go with this uncertainty in the front office? Not that they need to decide anything right this minute, but is it going to be through the 2021 season? Are the Phillies just going to wait it out for Andy McPhail to be finished with his year as team president because they know that they don't want to hire a general manager and then have to hire a team president the following year? I mean, it sure sounds like, based on what we talked about on Sunday night's episode, or Saturday night's, yeah, it was Sunday night's episode, episode 423 of Hittin' Season, where we talked about the Scott Lauber report, in which three people told him that the Phillies would love to have Andy McPhail resign and move out of the way now so they could hire a new president of baseball operations and general manager at the same time. But that may or may not happen. So if you've got Andy McPhail and Ned Rice in 2021 going into an offseason where the collective bargaining agreement is going to be negotiated and where you could be looking at a work stoppage of some point after after 2021, I'm watching Bryce Harper's prime slip away. If they reduce the payroll and they can't get their front office straightened out, I gotta believe when Bryce Harper came here, he didn't see this stuff coming. He didn't see the front office troubles. He didn't see a team that was going to be reducing payroll, letting a player like JT Realmuto go. Couldn't have seen that. Couldn't have seen that. And now we're getting an idea why Bryce Harper was screaming, pay him, why he was wearing the T-shirts, because I'm sure JT Realmuto told him that the Phillies explained to Realmuto's camp they didn't want to negotiate a contract extension in order to keep his 2020 salary low enough to avoid the luxury tax. Bryce Harper has to know that that's what was going on, and that's why he has been so vocal about it, because he knew it was a decision, a conscious decision made by John Middleton not to go forward with a contract extension until after the arbitration case was settled. And then, yes, some bad luck happened. COVID hit. They thought they would be able to get it done during spring training. But that's the risk you run when you kick the can down the road and you punt. You risk the unknown happening, whether it's a pandemic or something else. And so here's the bed the Phillies have made. And it's not a nice bed. It's a lumpy bed with sticker bushes in. It's a bad analogy, but I'm very concerned about the direction of this baseball team. There are good things about this baseball team. They have two very good starting pitchers. They have a pretty good lineup, although without Didi Gregorius and JT Realmuto, it will have bigger holes, and it needs a bullpen. But you've got an Alec Bohm, a good young third baseman or first baseman to build around. There are some pieces here, but it's not enough right now. And without a front office in place, and with some uncertainty about the direction of what the front office is going to look like, when the front office is going to come together, and how much the Phillies are going to be willing to spend, will they shell out the money to replace JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius and a number three starter and members of the bullpen? I don't know, guys. I feel as bad about the direction of this baseball team as I have felt since we started doing this podcast back in 2015. And I wish I could tell you something better than that. But I'm frustrated, and I'm sure you're frustrated, and we have to hope that John Middleton figures things out well enough to put a competitive baseball team on the field and get some decision makers in charge in order to help them do that, probably with a reduced payroll in 2021. Up next, I'm going to open up the mailbag. We'll get into your Twitter mailbag questions, and we'll go over some of this stuff in greater detail, and we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so let's jump in to the Twitter mailbag. And we will start down here with Dario's friend, at Dario's friend, who asks, the Phillies need to change their priorities to a bullpen. Two good starters and bulked up bullpen would be valuable. Who do you lose when shifting this mentality? JT, Didi, trade Kingery? It gets exhausting not being able to win games with three or four runs. I think what Dario's getting at here is if you do decide to invest in the bullpen, you're not going to be able to invest in other places. And I think we already know, it certainly seems for all the world like JT Realmuto will not be back in a Phillies uniform. And I highly doubt that Didi Gregorius will be back in a Phillies uniform. So yes, I think you do lose those two guys. I'm not so sure how much this team is going to bulk up the bullpen in free agency. Maybe they grab a guy or two, but it may not be one of the guys at the top end. So it may not have anything to do with JT or Didi. You can't trade Scott Kingery. Scott Kingery has absolutely zero value right now, and you'd be trading him at an ultra low point. So there's no way you're giving up Scott Kingery. I don't know if he enters the season next year as the everyday second baseman or if he enters the season as the utility guy again, but I think the days of thinking we had an all-star second baseman on our hands with Scott Kingery are gone, and I think other teams realize that too, and you're just not going to get much in trade value for him, so I think he's sticking around for a little while. Joe Hampson asks a very good question at jhamps10. What has Driveline actually done to help the Phillies as an organization? Will the Phillies keep trucking along with using Driveline throughout the organization, or will Klentak leaving result in them moving on? It's a great question, Joe. I don't have a great answer for you on that. I think a lot of that last part of your question is going to depend on what kind of a general manager they bring in and what kind of a team president they bring in. If you bring in a couple of guys who don't believe in Driveline, who don't think Driveline is helpful to Major League Baseball players, then I'm sure those guys will probably be driven out of the organization. To answer your first question, I can't tell you exactly what I think Driveline Baseball is doing for the Phillies right now. I think that they have some guys out there who know baseball, who know how to work with players, but you know, I think it hasn't really helped the Phillies develop players just yet. We see a lack of hard throwers in the Phillies organization. We don't see any emerging bats. We don't see a whole lot of starting pitchers, taking the next step. Maybe that work is being done in the lower levels of the minor leagues. And, you know, we didn't have a minor league season this year, so it was difficult to see with the 32-player group in Lehigh Valley exactly how well those guys were progressing. So I think once we get the minor leagues back next year, we'll have a better idea maybe how some of these prospects are progressing. But right now, it's hard to see exactly what Driveline has done to help the Phillies as an organization, and I think it's an open question whether or not they are still around once a new general manager are hired. I'm not going to say Driveline isn't helping, because I just don't know. I haven't seen the fruits of that labor, but it could very well be that it's happening at a lower level in the minor leagues, and you won't see the fruit from that until another year or two has gone by. But certainly, I think there are a number of open questions about how the Phillies are developing players. Their player development has obviously been lacking over these last few years, both with position players, but especially with pitchers. And we're just not seeing the hard throwers coming out of this organization. And maybe that's bad drafting, maybe that's bad development, and maybe Driveline isn't doing everything they need to do. Maybe they are. Maybe they are, Joe. I don't have an answer for you on that one. I think it's an open question based on my outside observation. And I'd love to get a Driveline guy on here to talk a little bit about what they're doing. So I will look to try and set that up here in the next few weeks as we get into the off season here. One of our friends at The Good Fight, one of our Good Fight writers, Smarty Jones, at The Smarty Jones, asks, what's your walkaway number for JT? And what do you think the Phillies number is? My walkaway number is any number approaching $200 million. And I think, frankly, I'm not going over 6 years on a JT Realmuto deal. So if I'm thinking, let's see, if I'm thinking, he probably wants to set the market at about $26 million. So if you do $26 million times six, that's $156 million. So let's say that the Mets and Yankees get crazy and they want to offer him $30 million a season. I think that's nuts. I don't think I would do that, but 30 times 6 is a 6-year, $180 million deal. I would still probably do that. That's probably my walkaway point. 6 and 180, and that's a lot of money. $30 million a year for a catcher who's going to be in his age 31 season next year. I get it. The last 3 years of that deal, that could be a ton of wasted money. And unless the Phillies shore up, unless they're planning to shore up the other areas of the team that need to be shored up, such as shortstop, number three starter, and fixing the bullpen, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to sign JT Realmuto to a 6-year, $180 million deal. And I think that's what we have to think about here, too. If the Phillies just sign JT Realmuto and they have to sign him to a $30 million a year deal. But that leaves them with, according, if they hamstring themselves by saying we can't do anything else, well, then the JT Realmuto contract is probably going to be a waste, because you're not going to have enough other good players around Realmuto and the rest of the Phillies. So what do I think the Phillies number is? That's the big question, because we don't know if payroll's coming down. We don't know if payroll's going to go up. It probably isn't, but it certainly seems like it's going to go down. And if it does, how much? And what does that affect? How does that affect JT Realmuto's price? My guess is, and again, this is a total guess, my guess is the Phillies walkaway number is something along the lines of 5 years. My guess is they probably don't want to go past 5 years. And my guess is they probably don't want to go past $26 million. My guess is 5 and 130. That's just a guess on my part. But if they're looking to reduce payroll, that's probably about as much as they could do. They would probably do enough to make JT Realmuto the highest paid catcher of all time and stop right there. Because I just don't, according to average annual value, of course. So Buster Posey, I mean, if you're looking at, Buster Posey has the highest average annual value of any catcher in baseball history when he signed a 7-year deal for about $130. So $130 million over 7 years comes to $18.5 million, and JT Realmuto wants to blow that out of the water. He wants to make about $26 million a year, which is about the same as Paul Goldschmidt, a little bit more than Paul Goldschmidt got for his extension with the St. Louis Cardinals, and he'll probably get that. My guess is that's probably about as high as I don't think the Phillies will go as high as $26 million. My guess is they'll beat the Buster Posey AAV. My guess is they'll probably say something along the lines of $20 or $21 million a year for 5 years. So they'll and that will probably be, maybe they do six. Maybe they do 6 years at $20 million and you do six for 120. That's not going to get the job done. That's just not going to get the job done. So I think the Phillies walk away number, because I think they're going to reduce payroll, I think it's going to be much lower than what he'll get from someplace else. And I think we all just need to orient our thinking to JT Realmuto going someplace else. Nick Becker at EOS Nick asks, can you rank the Phillies' options at shortstop considering their expected price? Lots of interesting names with Didi, Marcus Semien, Andrelton Simmons, Jose Iglesias, and Ha Sung Kim, who is a South Korean player who is going to be possibly coming over to the United States. I think the Phillies here, here's what you have to also consider. In 2022, the shortstop free agent class is potentially unbelievably good. Listen to some of the names that are going to be available in the 2022 shortstop free agent class. It's enough to make your mouths water. You're going to have Francisco Lindor, who will be 28 years old. Javier Baez, who will be 29. Carlos Correa, 27. Trevor Story, 29 years old. Corey Seager, 28 years old. All those guys are potential free agents after next season. So I don't think this is the offseason to go and sign a shortstop to a 3-year deal. I think this is the year to go out and sign a shortstop to a 1-year deal, which means I think you're talking about Andrelton Simmons and Jose Iglesias. Maybe Didi Gregorius doesn't find the market as plentiful for multi-year deals as he thinks, and maybe the Phillies, I think the Phillies will make him a qualifying offer, and I think if I'm Didi Gregorius, I am taking the qualifying offer, although I gotta say, he might not want to enter the free agent market next year with those other names that I just mentioned. So Didi's in a little bit of a tough spot because he's entering a free agent year here at a time when a lot of owners, I think, are going to be shedding payroll and they're going to be spending a lot less. So he might not get the 2 or 3 year deal that he wants. But if he takes the qualifying offer, he has a lot of other players who are younger and more talented to compete with for long-term free agent deals. Marcus Semien is a guy who you would want to spend some decent money on. And I could see if the Phillies didn't want to wait around for next year and they wanted to sign Semien to a 3 or 4 year deal, I think that would be good. But I think right now, it's Simmons and Iglesias are probably the two top guys that you could see. Or they just stay with Gene Segura at shortstop and put Scott Kingery at second base every day and go with Alec Bohm at third and Rhys Hoskins at first. That's the move that costs the least amount of money. And I don't think the Phillies are interested in a guy like Ha-Sung Kim, even though it is tantalizing what his talent is really off the charts. The Phillies just don't go out and sign international guys like that, right? Very rarely do they go out and sign a top international free agent like that. So most of the time those guys don't want to come to Philadelphia anyway. So I think that's what you're looking at for shortstop in 2021. If you held a gun to my head, I'd say the Phillies probably just stick with Gene Segura at shortstop and go back to that well, even though they purposefully went away from that in 2021 by going out and signing in 2020 by signing Didi Gregorius. I think a reduction in payroll is coming, and I don't think they have money to spend it on everyone, and they'll look at Gene Segura and say, we have an in-house option, let's just go with that. Leo Morganson at Morganstern MLB. Leo Morganstern asks, everything I've read about the 2021 payroll only cites luxury tax room, but the team isn't actually clearing $60 million in salary this offseason. Using yearly salaries, not AAV, the Phils are clearing only $41 million, and with payroll reducing in 2021, should we be worried about this number? Yes. Yes, because it sounds like the Phillies are reducing their payroll for actual real-world money issues, or what they're claiming are actual real-world money issues, and that it's not about the luxury tax this time around. If it was about the luxury tax, then it would be about the Phillies talking about, well, how can we stay right at around $208, $209 million in 2021? What you're hearing is an actual reduction in the payroll. And they haven't, Middleton hasn't come right out and said this. But he also didn't come right out and say, yes, we continue to believe that we'll be able to spend at our current spending level. That was quite the opposite of what he said on Saturday. So I think that they are looking at actual real monetary issues here. And the fact that they're only clearing $41 million in actual money, as opposed to $60 million in the computed average annual value of the salaries of the free agents who are leaving. Yeah, that probably does factor into it. You know, that is a $19 million difference. So I think that absolutely plays a part in it. How much? I can't say for sure, but it would be nice to know exactly how much this Phillies team earns and makes and brings in on a year-to-year basis, but we will really never know that information. Dan May at Dan with two N's and M-A-A-L. At Dannon Mall asks, would the Phillies be better off signing Real Muto for about $25 million per season or signing Gregorius and catcher Brian McCann for roughly the same amount of money? Signing Real Muto for $25 million a season. I've come around on this. Real Muto for $25 million a season is better than Gregorius and Brian McCann. Brian McCann's not a good defensive catcher at all, and I think you can look at his season this year as a possible outlier. Didi Gregorius was very, very good. But like I said, there's other shortstops that the Phillies could consider. I would rather them sign Andrelton Simmons or Jose Iglesias to a one-year deal, sign Real Muto for $25 million a season and go that route. Frankly, I'd rather they sign Didi Gregorius and JT Real Muto. But again, I think it all comes down to if the Phillies do want to go after one of those shortstops next year and sign one of those guys to a big money deal. They may not have the cash to do that. But if they are thinking in that way, then you might not get Gregorius for a 1 year deal. You might have to get 2 or 3 years, and that would take you out of the running for a guy like Correa or Lindor next offseason. So, but I think just signing I think the drop off from Real Muto to whoever would be coming in next is so steep and so severe that it's really not even close. Real Muto is the priority. He is the priority for about 20. If it's $25 million a season, the Phillies should run to the bank to do that. Dylan E. at ManUTDDYL asks, who will be the biggest Phillies free agent signing this offseason? Man, another really good question. I don't think it will be the top guy on the market, who is, of course, JT Real Muto. I don't think the Phillies are interested in Trevor Bauer. I don't think the Phillies are going to go after a guy like George Springer. He's a guy who could be interesting as a center field option, but I don't think so. I don't think the Phillies are going after Marcus Semien. I don't think the Phillies are going after Marcell Ozuna or DJ LeMahieu. I think maybe it could be Didi Gregorius. It could be a guy like Marcus Stroman to be the team's number three starter. It could be a bullpen guy. It could be a bullpen guy like Oakland's Liam Hendricks. It could be a guy like the Dodgers' Blake Treinen. It could be a guy like the Rays' Alex Colomé. Shane Green from Atlanta. You could be looking at a guy like Masahiro Tanaka as your number three starter. You know, Guy, I'd love for them to go. Well, I'll get to that in just a second. But, you know, I think, you know, Mike Minor's a guy that they were really connected to, that they, you know, it seemed like that the Phillies really liked a couple of years ago when he was a hot commodity and now is no longer a hot commodity. Of course, it would be just like the Phillies to pick him up when he's on a downward slope as opposed to on the upward slope. But the Phillies' biggest free agent signing, it could very well be Didi Gregorius, guys. Because I don't think they're going to sign JT Realmuto, and I think if they don't sign JT Realmuto, I think that they could get Didi Gregorius at a reasonable 2 or 3 year deal. I think the odds of them going after a Lindor, or a Correa or something like that the year after next, I think those are very remote. I just think they've already gotten their huge player in Bryce Harper. I just don't think they're going to go down that road, and I could be totally wrong about that. My guess is it's going to be either be Didi Gregorius as their number one free agent signed this offseason or Marcus Stroman. Those would be my two guesses, but the Phillies rarely ever go after the obvious guys. And so Dylan, we'll just wait and see. Chris Heim at Heimtime 10 asks, is Adam Haseley our everyday center fielder next season? Who are the potential options to replace JT and to replace Reese for part of next season, or to replace Bohm if the plan is to move him to first base temporarily? Haseley is probably going to share the center field duty with Roman Quinn, just like he did this year. I don't think they're ready to give the everyday job to Adam Haseley. I am not a Roman Quinn guy. I don't think there are many Roman Quinn guys out there. But Joe Girardi kept playing Roman Quinn last year, because when Roman Quinn did get on base, he was a threat to run, and he did cause some problems. The problem with Roman Quinn is he just doesn't get on base enough. Adam Haseley does a pretty good job getting on base. He doesn't hit for any power. And Haseley's defense in center field dropped last year for some strange reason. Roman Quinn's defense in center field was a little shaky here and there too. Frankly, the Phillies could use an upgrade in center field. I don't know how good George Springer is. He's getting older. He's 31. You know, his best years were during the cheating scandal. And so I don't know if George Springer is really legit good still, if he's going to be on the backside of his career, how much he would cost in free agency, how many years you'd have to sign him for. Again, if payroll's coming down, you've got two guys here in Haseley and Quinn who did okay in center field, although it was not great. They were definitely below league average or in the bottom half of National League center field combos in 2020. In terms of wins above replacement, well, it's actually a little worse than I thought. If the Phillies were exactly replacement level, they were finished 11th out of 15 teams in center field wins above replacement at 0.0. Offensively, it was really bad. They were 12th in weighted runs created at the position with just 67. 67 wins weighted runs created plus. And a WOBA of 273. The Phillies center fielders combined hit 237 this year with a 294 on base percentage and just a 325 slugging percentage. But frankly, center field has become a bit of a wasteland in Major League Baseball. It really has been there really just aren't many good center fielders to go around. So I think if you're the Phillies, you probably just stick with Haseley and Roman Quinn. Who are the potential options to replace JT? Well, as you heard just a second ago, and it's not, I said Brian McCann just a few minutes ago. I'm an idiot, of course. It's not Brian McCann. It's James McCann, who had a decent offensive season this year, but, you know, is certainly no JT Realmuto, and I don't think the Phillies are going to go down the James McCann road. I think if they don't sign JT Realmuto, they replace him with Andrew Knapp and Rafael Marchand. I mean, maybe go out and get Wilson Ramos if you're one a veteran. You know, Wilson Ramos is going to be available. He was with the Phillies before. Maybe you go out and get Wilson Ramos to do the job. I don't know. You know, and I don't think you're going to need to replace Reese Hoskins for part of next season. It sounds like Reese Hoskins is going to be ready to go in spring training, provided it starts on time. So I think Reese Hoskins, because he didn't need Tommy John surgery, he got a different kind of surgery. So basically, you know, it's a surgery that's going to take, you know, about 6 months to heal, but that should get him right in line with the start of spring training. So let's see, it's, you know, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. Yeah, you're basically looking at March or April when he could come back. So I think Rhys Hoskins is going to be back. Yeah, your backup plan is Alec Bohm at first base, and then you're mixing and matching in the infield again, just like you did this year. So Sasha Sasha Zakarin at TTLMMKY asks, what kind of player, any position, would the Phillies have to sign to make up for JT's departure? There isn't one. JT Realmuto is the top free agent on the market. And it's not even close, really. I mean, Marcus Semien is maybe number two. George Springer is probably number three, but they are behind JT Realmuto. So there really is not any kind of player at any position that the Phillies could sign to make up for JT Realmuto's departure, Sasha. I'm sorry to tell you that. But that is the truth. He is the number one free agent on the market for a reason. There's really nothing the Phillies can do to replace him by going out and getting somebody else. There's not a single better free agent on the market. If they got Marcus Semien or they got, you know, George Springer, it would help, but it wouldn't make up for it. Not even a little bit. Ed McLaughlin asks @EJ_McLaughlin. And it stops at MCLAUGHL. I would like to hear how you would handle the off season. He's asking me. Oh goodness gracious, Ed! You shouldn't have done this. A plan that goes over the luxury tax and a plan that stays under the tax. All right. Well, here's the over the tax plan, and this is the fun one. Sign JT Realmuto for whatever is needed to beat out other teams. Get starting pitcher Taijuan Walker as your number three starter. Sign Alex Colome and Liam Hendricks for the bullpen. And grab Jose Iglesias or Andrelton Simmons on a one-year deal so they can get one of the stud shortstops in next year's market. That's if you don't give a crud. That's if you just don't care about the luxury tax. If you want to stay under the tax, well, then you basically need to keep payroll where it is right now, which, again, you could probably re-sign JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius, and maybe you can go out and get a Marcus Stroman and sign a relief pitcher, and you can probably keep yourself right around $208, $209 million. If you're going to reduce the payroll, which again is what I think is going to happen, you go with Andrew Knapp at catcher, you sign James Paxton or maybe Cole Hamels to a one-year deal, a couple injury-prone guys, left-handers. You sign Andrelton Simmons or Jose Iglesias to a one-year deal. Or you just give the job to Gene Segura and then you go dumpster diving for bullpen arms. That's the plan that really sucks. That's the plan that's awful. That's the plan that wastes Bryce Harper's prime years. That's why I'm concerned. Steve at Steve_Kramer asks, but in all seriousness, which positional need, either currently or still yet to occur, do you think is most likely to be overlooked? Catcher. Simply because they can't replace JT Realmuto. And if you go and get James McCann, it's probably better than Andrew Knapp. I mean, Andrew Knapp was great in 2020. If Andrew Knapp would hit like that over the course of a 130-game schedule, I'm saying 130 games because that's usually 130 to 140 games is how many games a catcher normally catches. If he could do that over 130 or 140 games, okay, I'll sign on to that. You're not going to get the same kind of defensive presence behind the plate as you had with JT, but I'll take that kind of offensive production from Andrew Knapp. I just don't believe what we saw this year is sustainable for him over the course of a full season, a full regular season. If it is, great. You know, I mean, you're going to get a drop-off from JT Realmuto, but you know, it's certainly usable. You can win with that kind of a production from Andrew Knapp. But I will tell you, the positional need that I see, if they don't re-sign JT Realmuto and they just decide to go with Andrew Knapp, then I think the position that you see get ignored is center field, because they could use some help in center field. They really could use an upgrade from Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn out there. But given the need at catcher, at shortstop, at starting pitcher and bullpen, I think center field is the position where you just say, we'll deal with that again this year with what we have. We'll hope for improvement from Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn. Maybe we play Adam Haseley a little bit more in 2021 and see what that looks like. So center field is probably the positional need that gets most overlooked this offseason. Brian Hunn asks, who's the least likely member of the rotation next year? Well, I think Vince Velasquez probably is not a member, a regular member of the starting rotation, but all the other guys are going to be back. Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, Zach Eflin, and Spencer Howard, if he's healthy, will all be back. Again, Spencer Howard may be the least likely member of the rotation next year, but the plan is certainly going to be for him to be a part of the Phillies' 2021 rotation. And so ends another edition of the Hit and Season Mailbag. Thank you to all of my Twitter followers who tweeted in questions. If I didn't get to your question, please tweet it at me again, and we'll answer it on the Sunday night edition of the podcast with Justin and Liz. We'll get to it. I wasn't able to squeeze everything in, and so I am sure that I missed something. But I think I got most of the questions in here, and we basically covered a wide array of issues that the Phillies are going to be facing here this offseason. Clearly, a lot of you are concerned about the direction this team is taking and are uncertain as to how the Phillies move forward here this coming offseason. All right, let's do our stat of the week, and this is an American League Championship Series stat of the week. This was, even though it involved the Astros, this was pretty interesting. George Springer led off Game 5 against Game 5 of the American League Championship Series with a home run, a game the Astros had to win. They're trailing 3-1 in the series in order to move on. Carlos Correa hit a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth inning to win the game, a 4-3 win for Houston that pushed the series to a 3-2 series lead for Tampa. But now Houston has life. It is the first time in postseason history a team has had both a leadoff home run and a walk-off home run in the same game. That's pretty interesting that's never, ever happened before. Folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hit and Season. My thanks to all of you once again for submitting your mailbag questions. And folks, don't forget to head on over to our Patreon, Hit and Season. We got lots of bonus stuff going on over there. You guys can check out bonus podcasts of all kinds, of all shapes, and all sizes. Go to patreon.com/hittandseason. And if you would, please go to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review for the Good Fight podcast feeds, and let us know what you think. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.